We're live.
Live!
From the Twin Cities with the Bob Sansevier Show. Great guests, interviews, and over 30 years of sports insight.
I'm pretty good at my job.
Here's the host of the show, Bob Sansevier.
I mean, with Priscilla, you know, he has so many pitches, and he's such a good pitcher. You just got to stay aggressive with him. You know, you got to stay aggressive to the fastball and not miss your pitch and be able to, you got guys on in scoring position, be able to cash them in.
And Hicks hits one high and deep to right field. And that will give the Twins a three-run lead. Two-run shot, first home run of the year for Aaron Hicks. And Porcillo's doubles with the long ball continue here. The Twins now on top 5-2.
Aaron Hicks. Talking about, Torrey helped him, told him a few pointers on Torrey's former teammate, Rick Porcillo, and looks what happens. Gets his first home run of the year. Good for him. Good for him. They're all. Everybody's hitting. Everybody's pitching. Tied for first. 10 games above 500. Good for them.
Feels good.
Yeah. And you got a lousy Toronto team coming in, right? They're 5 games under 500, I think. So maybe they get, you know, and that'll be a good test, too, because often it's these teams that are bad that they wind up struggling against after impressing you. In the past, it's been like that with most Minnesota teams. We'll see how it turns out. But we'll be talking quite a bit of baseball today. We talked to Pat Borzy from MinnPost and the New York Times. Talked some baseball with him. Jim Suhan, of course. Marcus Fuller joined us to talk about the NBA Finals, which are set. Golden State versus Cleveland. Klay Thompson had the concussion. Clearly, it'd be interesting. He claims he'll be fine in a week's time, but he went home and started throwing up. That's not a good sign when you have a concussion that you're throwing up.
No, that usually clinches it. If you didn't go and get it checked out by a doctor, if you're throwing up, you're towards the end of a concussion typically when you're throwing up.
Yeah, well, the best thing is just go lay down and take a nap. No, it's not at all. Don't do that. Actually, if you start throwing up, you should be at the hospital, shouldn't you? Or have it looked at. You think throwing up is a good thing?
When I got my first concussion, when I started to feel sick to my stomach and I ended up throwing up, my mom was on the phone with a nurse and said, well, if he throws up and he doesn't throw up anymore, it means it's healing and he's almost done being concussed.
Oh, I always heard
concussed.
If you start, when you're throwing up, it's pretty much a telltale you have a concussion and you don't want him to fall asleep or take a nap.
Well, I still had to stay awake. That was one of the stipulations after I threw up. Keep this little guy up. But also, this was a long time ago.
How old
this
were
was,
you?
I was probably about 10 years old. So
what'd you
I'm
get,
assuming medical science has baseball.
Ooh, yeah.
Didn't have a helmet on. Took one in the back of the head.
It was a lot of fun. You had it coming. Where was your helmet?
Our coach wanted to start practice a day or two ahead of every other team.
Before the helmets were turned out?
Parks and Rec hadn't distributed equipment yet. So we were going through a practice without equipment. All we had was baseballs, and I was running to first. Somebody was throwing me out from third, and first baseman missed it, got me in the back of the head.
So you had yourself a Coach Cleet type of guy, somebody who was going to be, he was going to get the jump on things.
Oh, yeah. We had the edge. We had the edge on the concussions.
Well, you led the league in concussions. That had to be fun for you.
Yeah.
That was not a very good a good thing on the coach's part. Did he feel bad or apologize to your mom?
I don't know.
You were concussed.
I
How would you
remember
know?
That.
Yeah, you couldn't remember because you had the concussion. But anyway, your NBA final set, Golden State against Cleveland. Golden State favored. If Klay Thompson is hurt, that could play a role. And LeBron is just, he is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah, he's changed. I mean, several years ago, it was a lot easier to put together if you put together the top five players in basketball history, regardless of position. Well, he's obviously in that group now. But who do you bump? 651-989-9105. All right, Jordan, LeBron, Magic,
yep,
Bird, and we haven't mentioned. You got to put a big man, Wilt, Bill Russell, Jabbar. I mean, who's number five?
I might go with Bill Russell.
Yeah,
just because of the run he went on with the Celtics.
Well,
was
I know that,
phenomenal.
But if you're talking about the best five in the history of the game,
yeah.
Can you argue at all with the four I just threw out?
Not really.
I don't think so. How you could either.
No.
But, I mean, you got the guy who gets the short shrift whenever you do these is George Mikan. He was by far the most dominant player of his era, except his era was so long ago people don't, you know, he probably was more dominant than any LeBron or Jordan or anyone was at the time he played.
What was the average height of the people that were trying to defend him back then?
Probably in the 6'4 to 6'5 range. Those were the taller guys.
And so he had quite the advantage in
that. 6'10 or so, yeah.
Still.
But I mean, he changed the game.
Mm-hmm.
He changed the width of the, you know, the paint. They changed that. I mean, everything, so many things changed because of him. He had an incredible impact on the game. But when you talk about, I mean, I think when people talk about him, and how, you know, when you talk about the greatest players, they look at him at the context, well, could he play today? Well, not at the, he wouldn't dominate the way he did then today, but he was just so much more dominant than other players.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a, I mean, we'll ask, you know, we'll ask Marcus when Marcus Fuller will be joining us shortly from the Pioneer Press about the NBA Finals, and I'll ask him about that too. Who is his five now? Who is your five? You know, and again, 651-989-9105. I am curious to, you know, to see people, who's in there? Sam, you in there? Put the microphone on. See where Sam goes on that. Do you hear what we were talking about? I don't know if you're working on something. Who would be the five? LeBron obviously is now in the five, where several years ago he would not have been.
LeBron, MJ,
yeah.
Russell, Wilt, and Robertson.
So you're leaving out Magic Johnson and Larry Bird.
You almost can't do a five. You need a 10.
No, but you have to do a five. And I'm not going by position, just the five best. The five best players in NBA history. Now, you went more with big men and left off Magic. And
that's kind of, for years, big men were what dominated the game from the 50s all the way up until, well, Larry Bird was still somewhat of a big man, but Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, he played a bunch of different positions, but primarily a massive, massive point guard. But it was big men for decades that dominated the game before it kind of transitioned in the 80s.
Well, actually, I mean, if you were to take the four of the five we mentioned, and as you put in Wilt or Russell, I mean, you have basically, you've got a starting four. You could put LeBron at Bird, you know, at forward, and you have your backcourt with Magic and Michael Jordan.
That wouldn't be too bad.
No, it wouldn't be too shabby at all. Actually, it was pretty. You pretty much had you had three of those guys in the when they had the dream team. You know, so that pretty much was that had happened before. What they didn't have is they had other pretty good big men playing then.
Well, they also had Larry Bird towards the tail end of his career when he started to have
Magic,
some more back issues.
Well, Magic is the same thing too.
Well, Magic could still play fairly well. He probably would have played a lot longer if people understood HIV and AIDS and everything a little bit better.
Yeah, but he also, at the time, though, he had to do a lot to keep himself healthy.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, it is it's an interesting, it's one of those things where you could argue it forever, because the guys that Sam threw out, Oscar Robertson, he was phenomenal. You know, I think a lot of people forget just how good he was. And when you're talking about, I mean, Wilt was a machine who, unfortunately, for most of his career, didn't have enough around him. Hence the 100-point game.
Yeah.
In Hershey, PA.
People around you when you can score, hit the century mark
by
yourself?
According to former Vikings coach Denny Green, he was there.
So was I.
To witness it. You were there too?
Yep.
Yeah, it's about 30 years before you were born, but you were there anyway. That makes sense. The NHL, you got Chicago, you got two game sevens. That's not too bad in the Stanley Cup, the conference finals.
It makes everything feel a little bit better, and there's a question kind of relating to this later on in the threesome. That both series are going to go to a game seven, so there's not going to be... Chicago had 9 days off before their series with Anaheim started. Anaheim had 7 days off. So it's not going to be that monumental gap between when the Stanley Cup final starts and when these series are done, which Friday and Saturday night.
Yeah, so that... the Stanley Cup final is going to start, June 3rd. So, I mean, that's not going to be much of a break at all for them.
Yeah, it's just a few days.
Yeah. And Tom Thibodeau, which was expected, he was fired. The Bulls announced that.
And good for Chicago for finally just doing it when most people expected this to happen. There were some rumors that they were waiting for all the other head coaching vacancies to be filled before they fired him, so he couldn't go to another team. Why would you do that?
If you're going to do it, just do it.
If you let him go to another team, you don't have to pay the rest of his salary. So why would you wait for every vacancy to be filled and then fire him and you still have to pay his salary?
Well, usually what they do is they pay the difference of a salary. Like a team could give him a little bit less, and then they wind up paying the difference to get him to where he was. It's not like he's collecting on top of. Generally, it's not like that, where you could get signed a new deal with a team, and you still get the other money.
But not as much. If he doesn't have another job, he still gets
the majority. Oh, he gets all of it then. No, yeah. He gets it all then if he doesn't have another job.
Yeah, so that's why I don't understand waiting for other teams to fill their jobs and then fire him so he can't have a job.
Well, that's
and
just
you have to pay him this whole year.
Yeah. And then the other one is Ray McDonald's a piece of work. He was arrested again for the second time this week. Santa Clara Police Department said the former Niners defensive end, also with the Bears for a couple of months and didn't do anything, obviously, signed in the offseason, arrested yesterday for violating a restraining order by being at a residence in Santa Clara. That residence, the residence of the former fiance and their infant child, his and the former fiance. And these two have had quite a tempestuous, stormy relationship. This is the same woman that he got into trouble with over the summer. His agent trying to spin it, basically, that it's the woman just making things up. That's what he's decided to go with. Even though you got the family saying, the mother and father of Ray McDonald, saying that he's probably will never play football again. He can get on with life and get into the business world now. Yeah, good luck with that, too.
Yeah, he seems to be putting together this pretty awful track record, so right now I'm inclined to believe that he was in violation of the restraining order.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to go well for him. They found him Wednesday. Well, man's got to eat. He was at Togo Sandwiches in Santa Clara. He was arrested without incident. You get when you get a yearning for a good sub.
Is that the only one?
The only what? Togo's?
Yeah.
I have no idea. I don't know if it's a franchise or not. I've never eaten at Togo's. I don't know if it's a big deal there or not. But it's just a list of things. How do you, again, the question we had the other day, how do you let this happen again after it happened last year and you got in all that trouble with it? And then in the same week, but it goes back to the other thing I said, and I said it the last few days, we're trying to apply rational thought to an irrational mind. It doesn't work that way. You just can't. Because some of these people, they're beyond sensibilities. And that could bring us to Adrian Peterson. No, he got in touch with his pal, Josina Anderson, from ESPN after Mike Zimmer made the comment, don't play for us, he's not going to play anywhere. And he just said it's not personal, it's business. He's basically reminding, he just wants more money, he wants guaranteed money. Again, they're not going to do it. They'd be idiots to do it. Why would you? His money is pretty much, for this year, is pretty much guaranteed. All he has to do is show up and the money's guaranteed that he'll get it.
Yep.
Because if he gets hurt, he's still going to get it. He just has to show up. He's worried about 2016 and 2017.
At least it seems like he's kind of changed his tune a little bit and saying, I'm not asking for a trade. It's not about that.
Yeah, it's about getting more money. Even though he got $12 million last year for sitting on his ass. And that was his own doing.
Yeah.
So, but he wants a guarantee money. He basically wants to get a deal so I guess he's set for the next 30 years.
Well, who doesn't want that deal?
You know what? If you are making, so the last 2 years he would make, this year and last year, over $25 million, right?
Yeah.
You can't make ends meet over the next life, your lifetime, and even your kid's lifetime with $25 million. You're really pissing money away. Then again, here's a guy who had the nice condo. All he had to do was pay, what, $12,000 or $15,000 in back taxes?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't. It went to a sheriff's sale. Somebody needs to talk to him about keeping an eye on his dough. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we'll talk to Marcus Fuller from the Pioneer Press. We'll hit him with that question. Who's his five? We'll be right back with that, and we have a caller. We'll get to the caller, too, when we return. Is there supposed to be words with this thing?
With music? No.
There we go. All right. I thought it was sooner than this. We are joined by Marcus Fuller from the Pioneer Press. Marcus, how are you?
Pretty good. You don't need any words with Stevie Wonder. Just the beat alone, man. That's good enough.
So you like the choice he made for you?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Appreciate that.
Anything for you, Marcus. Now, answer this question that we had earlier. LeBron, obviously, one of the top five players in the history of basketball. Who's in your top five?
Well, you know, I always have this in the back of my mind here. But, you know, with LeBron playing the way he is right now, you know, I'm not the biggest LeBron fan in the world. I actually used to be a pretty big hater when he was with the Heat. But he's won me over at the small forward position. And I think I'll put him in my top five all time with Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson at the guards.
Yep.
Obviously LeBron. I have Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain in the front court as well.
So you don't have Larry Bird?
No Larry Bird in there. LeBron has won out Larry Bird. I know the championships are there for Larry, but I'm sorry. I mean, LeBron is just a freak of nature. We haven't seen a player like him before. I mean, he's a mix between Magic and Michael and a lot of these players. You could put him at power forward.
The way I had it, I had Bird at small forward and him at power forward. But you know what? If you went with your lineup, I'm guessing that Wilt is your 7-foot power forward, because you're not going to take Russell out of the middle the way he rebounds, right? Or are you going to make him your power forward?
I think if you're just going by today's game, you know, you can pretty much use any center or a power forward. You can switch, you can swap those front court positions. Defensively, you know, Russell obviously can defend both positions. And Wilt, really, I mean, when we had a conversation about this on One and Done, you go back on our podcast, one of our first shows, we were talking about big men, the best big men of all time. And my partner, Harwood Robb, was a Shaquille O'Neal fan, and I'm a big Wilt Chamberlain fan. And you know, if you talk about Wilt's athleticism, we're talking about a guy that had a 45-inch vertical jump. He could run, a 10-1 or 10-3, in track. And he was a freak of nature. I mean, he led the league in assists 1 year. He could play power forward for sure at his size.
Well, and also,
I'm comfortable with those two front court players.
And nobody had his stamina because he claims to have bedded 25,000 women.
You know what? Wilt he's got to take that. He obviously did take that to his grave. And no one can claim that in the history of professional basketball.
Who had the time?
You know what? I think that it's hard for me to leave off, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You know, Shaquille O'Neal again is one. There's so many great centers. Hakeem Olajuwon was the guy that I love watching, and so with Dave Robinson. I mean, those two centers. But when you're talking about all time, you know, Wilt Chamberlain to me, it was sort of like a myth. I mean, the people that didn't really see him play, you know, the 100-point game, the fact that he could, you know, touch the top of the backboard. I mean, these guys are myths for me. I mean, myths and legends. And for me, I wish I could have met him. You know, I have a family in Philadelphia, and my grandmother used to tell me stories about living a few blocks away from him and watching him play with the kids, you know, every now and then. And I just said, I have so much respect for the guy, no matter what he said he's done off the court.
Well, he scored both on and off the court. Goes yeah. Without saying.
On the court, he was amazing. To me, he was the best player to ever play the game of basketball, but that's another argument right there.
Well, just think about what he did in the NBA. But could you imagine you're a high school team in the Philadelphia area and you're playing Overbrook, which was his high school, stepping on the court and seeing him on the other side of it?
Well, not only that, it was when he went to college. You know, I mean, one of the reasons why they wanted to not have freshmen eligible was
him.
Because of him, right? I mean, you know, this is a guy who came in and, you know, he averaged over 40 a game and 20 rebounds. And obviously he left college and went and played for the Globetrotters, because at the time, you know, you couldn't, go straight into the NBA at his age. And, you know, I think that for what he did for basketball at the time, obviously there weren't many players his size, but I just think there was just nothing like him, and there never will be.
Now, Marcus, I just took a quick look. Let me give you some high school numbers for him. In track, this goes back to when he was a kid. 6'6", he high jumped. The 440, he ran in 49 flat. The 880, or half a mile, he ran in 158.3. shot put 53-4, and he could broad jump 22 feet. And
oh,
this
yeah,
is a guy 6'11" when he went into high school.
Could have been an Olympian.
He could have been a decathlete. Although the pole vault might have been tough. He would have been longer than the pole.
Yeah.
Or taller.
Yeah, he's just one of those players where you just wish he could have played in a different era. Because I think they would have appreciated him a lot more. You know, there wasn't much media back then. Even when he scored 100 points, you know, they kind of pushed it aside a little bit. Was appreciated long after he did it.
It's by the way, in college, ran the 110.9, the shot put through 56, triple jump more than 50 feet, won the high jump in the Big 8 track and field championships 3 straight years. Yeah, he was pretty good. Now, how about, are you liking, like everyone else seems to be, Golden State? I just don't think you could discount the guy you used to hate.
Well, personally, I have to go with Golden State because I'm a Bay Area guy. I went to school at San Jose State in the Bay Area, and I still have family out there. I went to Golden State Warriors games growing up with Run TMC, Tim Hardaway, and Chris Mullin, and Mitch Richmond, and Manu Bol. I got to put Manu Bol on there. But, you know, I think that if you look at what Houston did, you know, as far as Harden in that last game, I mean, defensively, I think Golden State, you really don't appreciate their defense until a guy like Harden, who arguably was the MVP this year, you know, he had a game like he did with 13 turnovers, the most of all time in the playoffs. You know, that a lot of that was his own mistakes, and it just got into his head. But, you know, they're just underrated defensively. You know, I know they have the numbers, but when you just look at them, you know, Steph Curry, he's undersized for his position. Klay Thompson, you know, he's not the quickest two guard in the world, and then obviously Draymond Green is undersized. I mean, they rarely play a big lineup, and you know, it's just amazing to me that they can defend the way they do. You know, because they're not the most athletic team, and if they could do that to James Harden, I'm sorry, LeBron is the best player in the world, but he's not the jump shooter, he's not the ball handler that Harden is. You know, I mean, Kyrie Irving's going to have to come to play. And they're going to have to get some more help from J.R. Smith like they've been doing in the playoffs. And I'm excited about the series. I think, you know, I hope it goes 7 games. Part of me doesn't think it'll go that far, depending on what happens in these first 2. But I would love a game 7 between these 2 teams.
Nothing wrong. No, never anything wrong with the game 7. And your Warriors, I mean, this was long before you came around, but they had a pretty good center, too, in Nate Thurman.
You know, 75, I wasn't born yet, but Rick Barry, everybody knows his underhand free throws, and they have to bring that back. I think all the big men like Jahlil Okafor, that can't shoot free throws, they need to start going underhanded.
I think they're too embarrassed to try it, but you are right. That's the way it was done for a long time. Yeah, if you make it so
what's
what?
What's more embarrassing, that you airball your free throws or that you shoot 50% or below, you know, like a DeAndre Jordan, and they keep hacking you? I mean, I think that's embarrassing enough.
And, I used to love watching him because when he was in the ABA, you would see him. I mean, it was great to watch him because, you know, the Nets were, I think he played for the Nets then in the ABA. I would watch those games all the time with the red, white, and blue ball and him the only guy that would shoot free throws like that. But it was fun to watch. And I'm sure everybody messes around with it. It actually is pretty easy to do. And
Well, next time that we shoot baskets together, then you'll have to teach me because I've tried it before.
It's the spin. It's the way you.
It's a lot harder than
it's in the wrist.
A lot harder than it looks.
It's all in the wrist.
Yeah.
You can do that little wrist turn, and then you turn them back up, and there you go. Nothing but net. It was fun watching him shoot the underhanded free throws, though. So I'll work with you, Marcus. I promise you.
I appreciate that.
We'll take care of things.
I have no problem with my free throws, though, Bob. I have no problem with it. That was actually the strength of my game when I played was free throw shooting, although I didn't get to the line enough.
Well, had you gotten to the line a little bit more in that championship game out in Hawaii,
oh, man.
Maybe you would have won the darn thing.
Yeah, I put myself up for that one.
Yeah, you did.
Jahlil, to me, free throw shooting is a huge part of big man's deficiency in the big man's game. I mean, I think that, you know, he can't be on the court down the stretch in games if he's shooting 50% from the line. I just don't know. You know, I know we're not on that topic yet, but I'm just a big fan of Karl Towns. I mean, 80% for a 7-footer is, and whether he's going to shoot that in the NBA is a different story, but, you know, I think that that's incredible for a guy's size.
Well, you do know, Marcus, if he winds up here or wherever he does, they're going to get him above 50%. They're going to make him work at it.
Oh, yeah, I think a lot of players tried to do that with Shaq and DeAndre Jordan, Dwight Howard. Some guys, it's just in their mind. I don't know if you watched that Dale and Shaq special about Shaq and his old college coach, Dale Brown at LSU, but, you know, he said that, you know, it was a mental thing with the crowd. I mean, he kept thinking, he could see the people he could like read lips and see them frustrated about him missing free throws. And that just got into his head, you know, no matter how much he practiced it, you know, he would shoot 70-80% in practice and then he'd go in the game and he'd start, you know, watching the fans just shake their head and be disgusted at his free throw shooting.
It's because he
couldn't get over it.
He had so much time to think about it. That probably was part of the problem, too.
Yeah.
But Marcus, thanks for taking the time to join us. We always appreciate it. Marcus Fuller from the Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com. We'll talk again. You know, let's talk next week about as the draft is getting so much closer.
Appreciate it, Bob.
All right, take care. We're going to take a quick break. Come back. We'll come right back, or brack. Little threesome, three questions, three answers. Let's get to it.
It's a magic number. Yeah, it is.
He says go Vikings.
Magic number.
Go, 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 go.
Somewhere in there. Put your ass in there and then go with them. A little bonding with your team.
It's a magic number.
I haven't seen him in almost a year.
Has it been that long?
No, September. Almost a year. Right?
Yeah. Well, he was in town for court.
I don't know if all the players came to watch the court case, though. Right. Out there all wearing, hey, AP, hey!
Can I get an autograph?
Yeah.
Remember me? In a while.
All right, what's the first question in our threesome of the day?
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
I have three questions for you. Number one, game one of the NBA Finals isn't until next Thursday. Should the NBA bump up games if the conference series end too early?
Yeah, they absolutely should. I don't see why they're... Well, a lot of it has to do with, I guess, TV, because they want to have it set, but this is a long break. We talked about it yesterday, how long that it is between the... You know, because one went four and the other one went five.
So, yeah, why don't they schedule it so they are subject to change or something like that?
Well, they should have a contingency for sweeps and quick series. There's no reason for it to wait this long.
Yeah.
They should be starting it on Sunday. Get the thing going and, you know, get some of the weekend time in there.
As far as the NBA product itself goes, it's probably better so Kyrie Irving has time to get healthy. Curry can get a little bit more healthy.
Well, Klay Thompson
now with the concussion.
Well, for them, it's definitely better for the players. But that's not why they're not waiting for that. It has to do with the TV deals that the TV, you know, the contracts with the TVs, the networks don't want them earlier than that.
Yeah, and they just expect the conference series to go a little bit longer than these ones actually did. They were pretty lopsided. And by the end of it, do you think Houston was trying to take out Golden State players just because? Throwing knees into faces, Howard's throwing elbows into Bogut. People are ducking so Stephen Curry goes flipping over him.
Well, if James Harden had all those turnovers, they might have actually made a series of it. It made it a little more interesting. But they did take some guys out with them.
Yeah.
There's
but at least they
that.
Have a full week now.
Yeah, to get to heal up. Klay Thompson, he can stay on his couch and watch TV, which is what he said he plans on doing. So we'll see how it works out for him and them. But you can't ask for, you know, in terms of is Steph Curry leading his team against LeBron James. That's not a bad matchup.
Yeah. That MVP against former MVP.
Yeah. I mean, it's
several times.
It's a you can't get much better. You cannot get much better than that. Even the president was weighing in about what a great shot Curry is.
Yeah. So no one
plays
can stop him or something like that.
Yeah. He can't be stopped. So we'll see. What else you got?
Number two. Hey. What do you think the actual chances are Minneapolis gets awarded a college football national championship game?
That one I have a tough time buying. Because I think they want to keep it in, unlike the NFL, which tries to spread things around because they're 32 partners, and they don't have to keep Minneapolis happy.
No, not really.
You know, there's no reason to. And they want to keep it in warm weather cities. And the other thing is, Minnesota does not have a history you know, of major college football events or, you know, storied bowls. There's no bowls here.
I'll tell you who they're against for the 2020 game. It's Charlotte, New Orleans, San Francisco, Houston, and San Antonio.
Well, those aren't places either that have the storied bowls. However, New Orleans, if it was up to me, the Super Bowl would be in New Orleans every year. It's the perfect place for it because they can handle a crowd. You got the French Quarter where that, have you ever been to the French Quarter when something is happening, a big event?
No.
There's nothing like it because I've been there for Final Fours and Super Bowls, and it's phenomenal because the place is packed and it's hopping. It's just a great time. I've also been there for like a regular season game. It's the most depressing place you could ever be because it's desolate. You know, there's nobody on the Saturday night. It's very sparse because it's all the locals, and they stay in their own areas. But the for a big event, the French Quarter is just incredible.
They got Detroit is going for the 2019 college game.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I think we have a better shot.
Well, I'll tell you what,
Minneapolis than Detroit does.
If Detroit were to get it, you could kiss off Minneapolis because they're not going to go cold weather cities back to back.
No, that would make no sense.
You know, I just have a hard time believing they would even consider that. The San Francisco one has a better shot.
And doesn't it just kind of make sense for something that happens in the first or now second week of January, just that kind of cold time, you get a team like Ohio State, you want the fan base to travel with them. Best place to do that is somewhere in like Miami or San Diego.
Give me the list. You had mentioned New Orleans, San Francisco, San Antonio. What were the other ones?
Houston and Charlotte.
I don't think Houston and Charlotte are would fly. I think it would be New Orleans or San Francisco. They got the new stadium there. That's a possibility. Although you're talking about not perfect weather there either.
Yeah.
Now that becomes a little problematic. But New Orleans, you're talking shirt sleeves in January.
I'll do that.
That's not a bad place. Again, it's a great place because of the fans would love it. They'd go nuts over it.
Can't they get an outdoor stadium though?
What do you mean? They don't like their outdoor stadiums. They like to be covered up.
Come on.
It's too hot.
Domes are a thing of the past.
What are you talking? Well, maybe the dome, but the fancy thing like the Vikings again, that's no dome. That's it's fancy. It's very fancy.
Yeah.
What else you got?
And finally, ESPN's Keith Law says that the Twins are not a real playoff contender. One of the reasons is because the pitchers don't strike out enough batters. Do the Twins need more strikeouts to be a real playoff contender?
Well, that would help. This guy, though, going to piss all over the Twins. They get themselves in a tie for first, 10 games above 500, most wins in the month of May of any team in the American League. And he has to go just piddling all over everything.
Yeah, I saw the story yesterday when I got home.
He couldn't wait.
He had nothing good to say about the Twins. It was almost like he was Bud Selig in 2000 when he was trying to contract the team. Just, oh, they're terrible. Get them out of here. Nothing good to say. Said they couldn't get runners on base when they needed to. Couldn't advance them. Couldn't get them home.
But they're winning.
And the pitchers don't strike out anybody, so it's tough to see them.
Yes, but they're finding ways to win.
Yeah.
Now, do you say tough to sustain them getting into the postseason or doing well in the postseason?
Just getting there.
Well, I'm astounded at what they've done already. I mean, yes, they can fold up, but they've got the bullets to put in the chamber with Irvin Santana coming back.
Yeah.
In 30 games. I mean, the possibility of Buxton joining them. Vargas is tearing it up. Him rejoining them. You know, and you had mentioned Malone and the way he's pitching, if they need to plug somebody in.
But the Twins had a full decade of getting into the playoffs several times. They did not really have... They had one strikeout pitcher in Johan Santana, then they had one strikeout pitcher in Francisco Liriano. Before that, it was Brad Radke, Eric Milton, Joe Mays. These guys, they didn't strike out a ton.
No, and I, you know what, he needs to say something that could be provocative. Because also, you look like a fool if you say the Twins are going to make the postseason right now nationally. Because nobody believes it. They just think they'll just, you know, fall apart. And when you look at that roster and lineup, it's not like it's loaded with super. There's no superstars on it. Maurer's being paid like a superstar, but he's not playing like one. They're just playing well.
Pitcher's ballpark and defense has vastly improved from last season.
Yeah, the defense has made a huge difference.
Hicks can cover all the ground you need. Eddie Rosario is pretty good at covering ground himself. Trevor Plouffe, massively improved.
Well, Torrey Hunter was a hell of a center fielder when he was, you know, when he was in his prime. Now he can't handle right.
He's not athletic like he used to be, but he still understands the angles he needs to take and things like that.
Yeah, he's fine. No, they, I mean, I just,
if they don't make the playoffs, it can't be because they didn't strike out enough batters.
No, and you know what?
It makes no sense.
This late, and again, it's about 2 months into the season, what they're doing is not fluky. It's not a fluke that they're being successful. They're finding ways to get it done. So let's take a quick break. You know what? We can talk to Pat Borsey about that from the New York Times, and also he writes for Min Post, and we'll talk to him about the Twins when we return. We are back, and we are joined by Pat Borsey, writes for the New York Times and Min Post. And Pat, I had an email exchange, and you're at the Lynx at their media day today. Is there anything exciting coming out of that?
Yeah, one of the backboards here shattered, basically on its own in the practice facility. A bunch of us are just standing here, and all of a sudden we hear this very loud crack, and we turn around, and one of the new glass backboards just splintered. Nobody dunked. Nobody did anything to it. It just broke on its own volition. That was a little spooky. I mean, I don't know whether, you know, what the bad luck thing is with fiberglass rather than real glass, but it's we're going to find out.
You know what? That would have been a good time for Lindsey Whalen or Maya Moore to say, I did that. That didn't have a heck of a story.
Maya was blaming Amber Harris, who was unfortunately nowhere near the area. That was interesting. I'm waiting for you got to figure if one of them busts, the other one's got to bust too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's pretty, oh my God. I've never heard of anything like that happening.
I have never heard of it. I've never seen it. I've never seen something just spontaneously splinter like that. It was very, very strange.
Well, it's not like somebody hit a high opera note or anything and everything shattered.
Well, I was not anybody I was talking to. I mean, unless Dave Schwartz has a Carol Levin has a secret career he hasn't told me about. He was the one I was talking to when it happened.
Well, that's a weird one. Now, speaking of a weird one, a lot of people think I never did. Twins to be above 10 games out above 500, did a tie for the lead, and we were just talking, our producer and I, about he heard Keith Law saying that the Twins can't keep up, they can't make the postseason because, well, they don't have enough strikeouts. Is that what the big reason, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether they're going to make the postseason or not. I would doubt it just because they haven't won in so long, and there's still a lot they have to prove, but they're playing pretty decently now, and what's Law saying, that because they don't strike out enough guys, they don't get enough swing and strikes, that their pitching isn't quite good enough? Is that what he's trying to say?
Yeah, he was just basically saying their starting rotation doesn't get enough strikeouts. There are too many balls put in play for this team to continue to win.
Well, he might be right. I mean, the season will tell us. Certainly, they're doing enough right now to win these games. I mean, there are two things that jump out for me is that. If the game's not 4-0 for the other team in the second inning like it was so many times last year, which is so demoralizing for everybody, let alone the pitchers, and that most of the games the Twins have scored first, and that's been a big help. I mean, these things go hand in hand. And you know, it's funny, I was after the game, not yesterday, but the day before, when Pelfrey pitched, I know Mike from the Mets, and so the group had kind of broken up, and we were standing there talking, and we were talking about how well they'd been playing, and there's still some of the smoke from the smoke machine in the air and all that. And, you know, he looks at me and he goes, these guys think they're world beaters. And he said it with a little bit of astonishment, but the point being that if you think you got a chance to win, that's 90% of the battle. I mean, last year they're down, they're losing games early, they're getting smoked, you can't help but think in that locker room, in that clubhouse, you can't help but think, oh, God, we stick. They don't think that. At least they don't think that now. And I'll be interested to see how this goes, particularly with Toronto coming in here, because Toronto can rake.
Now, have you done, or has anyone done a chart of what they are pre- and post-smoke machine, their record?
I haven't asked the question of exactly when they started with the smoke machine.
But it's been pretty good since they got the smoke machine. Is what, about is it 3 weeks? It hasn't been ridiculously long, and it was Torrey's doing, right?
Yeah, Torrey was the guy behind it. I mean, look, they didn't take it on the road. They started sometime after they got back home, and they had that just horrible home opener.
Yep.
But Would you like me to nail down what day it was? We can always do that. That's not that hard.
Well, but I mean, it might be worth their record since the smoke machine. It's just another, you know, piece of ridiculous minutia. But you know what? Maybe the smoke machine has made a difference. It's loosened them up, got them going. You never know.
I'll tell you what, and that thing belches a lot of smoke because every time we're in Molitor's office, it's like 40 guys smoke cigars in there before we walk in.
Now, this is not going to, we're not going to have a bunch of guys with lung issues, are we, at the end of the season from this thing?
I hope not. That's a very good question.
You know what, Pat? We're talking to Pat Borzy. He writes for the New York Times and MinnPost. There might be a New York Times story in here if these guys start coughing up a lung before you know it.
Yeah, I think that would be very much a New York Times story. Yeah,
they'd go for something like that for sure.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, and you know the Astros are doing this now too. The Astros have their own smoke machine. I don't know whether they got this from the Twins or they came up with this independently, but they're doing the same kind of thing now.
Interesting that the team with the best record in the American League and the team tied for the second best record, both using it, everybody may get the smoke machine now.
Well, you know, it goes back to a year or two ago where they had, you know, the Dodgers had the bubble machine in the dugout after the home runs. So it seems like quite a few teams now are coming up with these
gimmicky things.
Gimmicky, interesting, unusual, different, whatever celebrations for victories or home runs. And I guess as long as you don't. As long as you're not doing it on the field in front of the other pitcher, it's okay.
I'll tell you what, they should bring it in the dugout because that would be distracting as hell to the other pitcher if they put the smoke machine on when they're coming to the plate.
Well, it would certainly help you steal bases.
If you have to fog the whole infield.
Yeah.
That'd be, but you know what? It's great that they're having fun. And that's because it's about time after 4 years of just misery.
Yeah, and don't discount how much that helps, too. And a lot of that is Torrey, and then a lot of that is Molitor, and then it's just doing little things that help you win games. I mean, just little things like taking an extra base or advancing, like what Torrey did the other day, going from first to second, tagging up a play you don't usually see when the ball's hit the right field, because he knew that that Garcia, the right fielder for the White Sox, had a bum knee, and he was running to the line, and he would have a hard time stopping and making an accurate throw, because Garcia's got a good arm, and Torrey was absolutely right. Because he was able to tag up and go to second, and the throw only got to the cutoff man. I mean, then it got relayed in, but that's just enough time for him to get there. Little things like that, you know, Maurer going from second to third on a play or stealing third base, little tiny things that you can do if you pick up something on a pitcher. That kind of stuff all helps, and it all contributes to the guys having a little bit of fun because it feels like you're getting away with something, and that's always fun.
Well, I'll tell you what, that Torrey Hunter story is a great one because it just shows, I mean, these little things can have a huge impact because he just knew that the guy would have trouble stopping.
Yeah.
That's a great bit of information.
Yeah, right, and all that is just using a little bit of smarts. You know, baseball is more than any other sport to me anyway. Baseball is where you can, if you use your head, if you've got a little bit of intelligence and quite a bit of savvy, you can do things to make up for a lack of ability, okay, or not a complete lack of ability, but a lack of great ability is probably what I mean to say. You don't have to be a superstar to do these things. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be Mike Trout to take an extra base. You don't have to be, you know, the fastest runner to take an extra base. You know, you can do things if you pay attention and you look for things, and that's always fun. Particularly if you're not a superstar. You know, it's always a lot of fun to see that and to do that because it's another way to feel like you're contributing. And if you feel like you're contributing, that really is a big help.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that, Pat. Hey, Pat, the time flew here. Let's talk again next week because it's I like your take on things. I love that story about Torrey. We'll talk to you again, Pat Borzy from the New York Times and MinnPost. Thanks for taking the time today, Pat.
Always a pleasure, Bob. Thanks.
All right, take care. Going to take a quick break. We'll be joined by Jack, who just sent me a text. There's a little bit of an issue out there on the cops shut down the ramps on 35. Traffic in a detour. What the heck's going on there? Have you heard anything?
Nope.
For the cops to shut down the ramp. Hopefully there's no legal issues. But Jack will be with us. You know what? When we get back, We were going to call him a little later. I'm going to, Sam, I'll get you his number. Chuck Foreman is going to talk to us. He was going to join us when Jack was here. We'll come right back. We'll talk to Chuck Foreman, and then Jack will be joining us in a short while. Vikings icon Chuck Foreman and Jack Jablonski up with us next.